The future. A relentless, desperate wasteland ravaged by nuclear war. With the destruction of the internet and search engines such as Google, accurate information about the past is traded like currency. Two brave travelers are commissioned with the dangerous task of going back through time to gather as much information as they can to find out about the late 20th and early 21st centuries in hopes that a future society may rebuild what was lost and avoid the horror of a smoldering radioactive planet. But there is a catch. The travelers' journey back across eons of time is a one-way trip, leaving them stranded in the past. There's no way to communicate their findings to the future other than burying reinforced time capsules in the ground. In the hopes that one day recordings such as these will be unearthed to provide a glimpse of the world that once was. All right. This is the mission of the crispy coated robots. And it must succeed.
Hey, it's Jim.
Hey, it's Joseph.
And hey, it's George. And today's show is a very special show. This is show number 200, boys.
200.
200.
I just hope it is twice as good as 100 was.
I think it's 100 shows better.
How many of the episodes from 1 to 200? Give me about 10 minutes here.
All right.
Episode number 1. No, I'm not going to do that. I know episode number 3 by hand. And
Tom has something special for us for
200?
No.
No, nothing special?
200 what? Celebration.
Wow. Nothing. Okay.
He says he didn't know.
He didn't know it was 200? Last time was 199.
I want to bring up that it's been 200 episodes that Tom's been our intern for free.
Oh no, was he on the first episode?
I just assumed he was there.
He came in like episode 50 or something.
Dang it, because I was about to say, I was thinking that we need to start paying him something, but he's got 50 more episodes.
He's got 50 more to go.
I think he came in around the mockumentary episode, I think.
Nice gesture there, Joseph.
Joseph will pay you after the show today. Exciting topics. We've never done one of these for the home office. This is top 5 rom-coms.
Crazy.
Romantic comedies. Okay. And the second topic, again, another great topic. Toys that time forgot. So these are toys that back in the day they were the you had to have kind of toy, and then they turned into went into obscurity for whatever reason. So
I wonder if
they sort of changed. They're not the original. Can I say that? Because some of mine are like the original really doesn't look like what they are now.
Yeah, mine are all like defunct. So, I mean, but anyways, let's go back to the rom-com thing. I'm surprised we haven't done that, but we've done a whole show on household cleaners and trees. We've never done romantic comedies.
I think this is going to be a CCR version of rom-coms, though. So I want to let all our faithful fans know that it's not going to just be like your typical, if 27 Dresses gets on here, I'm going to be surprised.
Dang it.
I'm just going to be surprised.
Oh, hang on a second.
Make some edits. Uh-oh.
Controversy.
All right, let's go ahead and start.
Rom-com, is this a love triangle? Is that what, are you hitting on Jim here or something?
Let's start with rom-coms. Joseph, what's your number 5?
Okay, my number 5 rom-com is The Big Sick. From 2017. Have either of you seen this?
Yes.
I wanted to see it, but I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah.
It's
based on a true story. Yeah. Written by Kamal Nanjiani, who is, you know, from what do you call it? Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
Silicon Valley, you know, he's great. It's about the story of him and his wife. It was written by his wife. And it's a great little story. It's a rom-com where they use the coma bit, you know, you have a lot of that kind of stuff. But this one isn't the silly kind where they're using the coma to, you know, say, oh, this person's weird. It's basically a guy that starts dating a girl. things are going well. All of a sudden, she gets really sick, goes into a coma, and he sort of sticks it out. You know, he sort of sticks with her, meets the family while she's in a coma, and there's a whole relationship between that. Yeah, Ray Romano and Holly Hunter, who do a great job. And it's just 2017. It's great. It's a big sick.
Yeah. Check out our show about best comas, because this we talk about.
Did we do one on that?
Do we? Oh, I don't know. Maybe I.
There's a couple more coma things coming here on this episode here. If we didn't do it, George, what's your number five?
So about two decades before John Patrick Shane Lee earned the Pulitzer Prize and the Tony for writing the Doubt, he won an Oscar for this 1987 movie Moonstruck. So directed by the great Norman Jewison, the Moonstruck has Cher. She's this Italian-American widow living with her parents in Brooklyn, and she falls for her fiancé's younger brother, I guess, Nicolas Cage. But really great performances all the way around. And, you know, whenever a lot of nominees, you know, from this Oscar nominees, Cher basically said, yeah. But she said that she was basically just playing herself. So not a lot of acting there. But Moonstruck from 1987, my number five.
Introduced the world to Olympia Dukakis, and Dukakis mania happened after that with a bunch of other films.
Her cousin or nephew or what?
Elected or whatever. But yeah. George, this has a good chance. This was the first date. Is it the first date? Or the first movie for sure my wife and I saw together. So this was like beginning of the relationship.
Well, you got to vote for it now.
And I still have the movie stub too. So from Humble Six before them all.
Oh, yeah.
All right. My number five is the only selection I think that's going to be on either of our lists that includes somebody we actually know is in the film. It's from 1998. It's called The Wedding Singer with Adam Sandler. And our friend, Joseph and I's friend who graduated with Rodney Gober, dances in the first. And I found it right away when I first watched it, Joseph. I said, wait a minute, that guy looks a lot like Rodney
Gober. I had no idea. Not till years later.
It happens at the very beginning of the movie when they're playing You Spin Me Around Like a Record, and they just have this frantic dancing on the dance floor, and Roddy just stops and just is kind of like this kind of weird move. But the movie is great. Works on two levels. Good romantic comedy, and also you have the whole 80s nostalgia factor. Yeah. This movie came out in 1998, so they're all playing off. Everybody kind of saw it. Kind of in our age group, we're like, oh man, there's a couple things that are wrong, like time wise, like when he says, oh, I think they just shot JR, and a couple other things that's like, well, the timeline's kind of off on this, but they just kind of threw all the 80s stuff at the thing. Great performance by Adam Sandler. This is kind of his first kind of serious movie. I mean, Billy Madison and the other stuff, he was just kind of like Happy Gilmore. He's kind of playing himself. But there's a really good subplot here, and it also spawned a Broadway musical because
not hyper Sandler.
It's not hyper Sandler. Yeah. I mean, there's a couple outburst scenes, you know.
Yeah, but
you could have told me this is what you could have told me months ago. But you get that, but you also get the sweet part of it too. And Drew Barrymore and him, a great pair. This is their best outing. Wedding Singer from 1998 is my number five. On to number five, Toy Time Forgot, Joseph.
Starting out with the controversial one because it's still around, but it looks nothing like the original one. I'm talking about the original orange piece of plastic that you would throw on the ground and you put a water hose on it. And they're like, here, run at it, jump on it, and slip away. I'm talking about the original slip and slide. They still have slip and slides, but they don't look anything like the original one. And the childhood memory I have with this, George, you know, I grew up in sort of a rough neighborhood. Okay. It was survival of the fittest.
Glass on the slip and slide.
Well, what we would do is we would basically make it a gauntlet without realizing what a gauntlet was, because when you would take turns, we would have pine cones and we would try to throw them at the person sliding down. So that was our slip and slide fun in the 70s, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. So that's my number five, slip and slide.
Prepare to be pelted.
Yes. All right, George, what's your number five?
So I'm doing my order a little differently. Instead of order of favorites. I'm revealing them in the sequence the toys were released to the public. So my first one here, my number five, invented in 1946 by Albert C. Carter and Abe Bookman. This item is a little plastic sphere made to look like an oversized eight ball. It is Magic Eight Ball. And inside this ball, there was this little reservoir that contained like a 20-sided die, and floating in the kind of this blue dark liquid. And as you would shake it and turn it, it was purposefully obscured, but it would rise to the top and it would have a little message on it. That would be, you'd ask it a yes, no question. And then you'd turn it over and then it would say, you know, most likely, or ask again later. I always got to ask again later. The Magic 8 Ball was busy whenever I was trying to ask it questions. or it never said straight up no. It would say my reply is no, or yes, definitely, or signs point to yes, you know. So, Joseph, did you ever get concentrate and ask again? Like it was your fault?
Absolutely. And I'm so glad you changed the terminology. Jim showing his Magic 8 Ball on his phone.
Yes. Will the selection make it in to our?
But
top
see what
five?
Jim is doing is something that
it is certain. Says on the I don't think so. Magic 8 Ball.
You're not supposed to shake the 8 Ball. You're supposed to turn it over. Apparently,
the bubbles,
shaking it, yeah. Ruin the thing. Now I shook it all the time. I'm just saying, years later, I found out the instructions on the box says, do not shake the 8 Ball. So
do not anger Magic 8 Ball.
Now, I love both of your selections. I do love both your selections. They are both still available in toy stores.
Right.
Mine is nowhere near toy stores.
You can get a Magic 8 Ball still?
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's a lot of retro stuff. That's why I found this topic very hard. Yeah.
All right. So mine is Pulsar, the ultimate man of adventure. 13 and a half inches tall, comes with boots and a costume, and made by Mattel. No longer available, but you can actually open up his kind of jumpsuit and see his blood pumping, pushes back and see his blood going through his veins, heart pumping.
That is an adventure for sure.
Yes. And he looks like he's got gray hair. He looks like a jacked up Leslie Nielsen. So, and he has
he's jacked up. All right.
And he has like this little center where you can put his body in and evaluate his brain and check all his systems. Cause he's a little bit of a robot too. So, but Pulsar was kind of like, the $6 million man dial to the next level, because you could kind of see all his kind of organs, and when he gets jacked up and ready to be the man of adventure, you can see his heart pumping and all that stuff. You can actually put a mission disc. It came with two mission discs. You put it in his brain.
Did you say disc? I'm sorry.
Did you own this? I remember this being sort of a bomb.
No, I own this. It was one of my favorite dolls. Yeah, it was kind of a bomb. And Mattel put it out too, just kind of counteract the Barbie stuff. This was kind of their big male dial for like late 70s, early 80s. But Pulsar, the ultimate man of adventure, is my number five classic. All right, what is your number five for rom-com, Joseph?
One of a kind. It's you know, you take the idea of till death do you part, and you say, well, does that mean that you can have relationships after you die? And this movie answers the question and says yes. I'm talking about 1991's Defending Your Life. Albert Brooks, yeah, Meryl Streep have a budding romance, you know, and as they wait to decide whether they're going to heaven or not. This movie is just a masterpiece. It is so good.
Rip Torn has a great scene in that.
On so many levels. Rip Torn, everyone in that. It's firing on all cylinders. The comedy's there. It's so good. This is probably the only Albert Brooks movie that my wife really loves. You know, she finds Albert Brooks to be a little bit annoying sometimes, but she absolutely loves this movie. And she loves the romantic relationships that they have, because it really is more of a friendship. It's not like this hot, heavy kind of relationship. It's just people finding companionship in the strangest of places after they die. So that's why it's my number four, Defending Your Life.
All right.
George, well, I have another movie that has Albert Brooks in a crucial role. It's another rom-com from 1987. That was a good year for rom-coms. This one, James L. Brooks wrote, produced, and directed Broadcast News from 1987, which kind of predicted the decline of American journalism, you know. But there's this love triangle. Holly Hunter plays a TV producer who's smart and has integrity, like her best friend, Albert Brooks, okay, who's also a journalist. But she gets a crush on this new anchor, William Hurt, who is gorgeous looking, very presentable, but just not a whole lot happening in his head. But one thing that's interesting, spoiler, okay, I know the movie's been out since 87, but unlike most rom-coms, Broadcast News doesn't necessarily end with the happy paired off couple, you know. So I appreciate the take on that from James L. Brooks. But my number four, Broadcast News.
All right. My number four is definitely, it's almost like a guilty pleasure. It's one of my favorite rom-coms, and it's all based upon the likability of Sandra Bullock in her most cutest, likable, fun Speed. Kind of role. Yes. And this is While You Were Sleeping. We talked about coma movies. Where she gets mistaken for the fiance of a comatose patient. Everybody's perfectly cast her. I always love a movie with Jack Warden. It's kind of like the patriarch of the family. And he's here. Peter Boyle's here. And you have Bill Pullman. Peter Gallagher is pretty much laying down the whole movie. But the charm, the writing, I think this is her best movie. Like I said, it's a guilty pleasure. I mean, I know she's got Speed and all these other
movies. Better than The Net?
Yes, better than The Net. great supporting cast, but I liked the way that this one played out, and it just, to me, it's like one of the every scene kind of fed off another scene, and she got deeper in this kind of hole, and when she comes out of it, everything seems to be okay, just like every rom-com. But this one really worked for me. While You Were Sleeping from 1995, and Sandra Bullock.
Do you remember how she convinces the family that she knew Peter Gallagher's character?
The tattoo, what? Wasn't it? Was it a tattoo?
No, it wasn't a tattoo. He had punctured a testicle with a pencil.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Boy. That's right.
That is the most horrific thing. But I remember that about that movie. No, I remember, you know, not that I've had that injury, but yeah, that's when you say that, they could have renamed it How You Punctured Your Testicle.
Yeah, and this is Bill Pullman before his presidency from Independence Day. So this is
Before Zero Effect.
Yeah, so a lot of Pullman. Yeah, this is Pullman, you know, getting those roles off this one. All right, so we got number four now, Toys That Time Forgot, Joseph.
Started in 1971 by Play School, discontinued actually in 1993, comes back every once in a while. I think they have a new reiteration of this toy, but the new toys look nothing like the originals. And I'm talking about the Weebles. They wobble, but they don't fall down. These are the plastic little egg-shaped figurines that you would have little play sets with and all that. And I remember, you know, 1971, I got some of the original stuff. I was all of like 4 or 5 years old, and I loved the Weeble Wobbles because you tried to make them fall down. That was a challenge. Never happened, but you would try as hard as heck to try to make those things fall down. So that is my number four, the Weebles.
I remember these. Yeah. And they had like, even though they didn't have arms or legs, because they are egg shaped, they had cars that you would put them in. And,
yep.
And all these.
We had like a little boat, and it had a little plastic diving board that was our springy, and we would put it on there, and we'd just try to launch them as.
Yeah.
You know? Of course, you know, as a little boy, you can't figure out how to destroy things, you know.
That's all right. George, what's your number four?
Number four for me, released to the North American market in 1966 by the Marx Toy Company, Rock'em Sock'em Robots. So this is a two-player action game. It has these like little plastic this boxing square, 20-inch yellow square boxing ring platform with literally little ropes around it. And you have these two robot fighters, and you play it with somebody. So you have two players you'll both manage these robots with this little lever joystick thing, and you just push those buttons repeatedly, and you're moving them around trying to get a good angle, left jabs and right uppercuts, until one of the heads of the other robot pops up. It doesn't pop off because they've got, like, you know, a thing holding it in place, but it didn't need battery.
Nope.
And it did have the one catchphrase, knock his block off. But right. Y'all remember this? Did y'all have one?
Yes. This was actually a censored toy. Basically, they were supposed to be two boxers, but an actual boxer, professional boxer, died in the ring. So the makers thought it was too controversial. So they decided to make them robots instead of, like, human beings. Because they felt like, okay, well, no one can be offended at you know, robots beating
killing each other. Do you remember the names, Joseph?
I do not. That I don't know. I just remember the blue and the red. That's all I remember. Blue,
red. The red rocker and the blue bomber.
Okay. I actually never knew that.
My number four, George, is an improvement on yours. Your number four from 1975. And this is how it was spelled. Karatemen by Aurora is Karatate. And Karate Men. And basically, it's like Rock'em Sock'em Robots, but you're not confined to a ring. You have two Karate Men. One's bald with a mustache. The other one looks like an old-time G.I. Joe. They're in karate outfits. You can either have their full outfit on, or, you know, have their just chest show and have their thing on. But it has the karate moves. You hit their arms and they fight each other. And these toys were made famous, actually, in an episode of All in the Family, the one from 1977. Very serious episode. When Edith Bunker's friend, the transvestite character, passes away, and she has a crisis of faith. But this is the comedy when Archie Bunker and Mike Stivic constantly play with these karate dolls. But it's cool. Instead of their head getting knocked off, they would just lean back completely once you won. And this is my first item I ever bought at a garage sale. It was this and a Beatles Yellow Submarine puzzle with missing pieces. But the Karate Men from Aurora from 1975 is definitely a lost toy that you can still see if you have the All in the Family box set. But this is a classic.
You can buy this off of eBay. I'm looking at it right now. $40, Jim.
Yeah.
Your dreams can come true.
I don't know
if
it's that much. I do see some, like, there's ones for
$40. I'm looking at one right here. Look.
And there's like one that's $102 too. I wonder what the difference is there. So
the seller. No, I mean, seriously.
But pretty cool toy, though. I remember back in the day, it was like Rock'em Sock'em Robots without the ring. All right. Yeah.
So, apparently, the stigma of people hurting people, you know, had passed by that time. And
Jim's Christmases were like my Christmases. They were filled with the knockoffs of the mega selling one. I don't remember this one at all, Jim.
Karatemen. Look, if you look it up, you might remember it, or at least remember it from the All in the Family episode, which was hilarious. All right. So we're on to number three, rom-com, and then we'll take a break. What you got, Joseph?
Yeah. So number three, is a rom-com. It is. And people will say, they'll start to get grossed out by it.
Die Hard.
But I'm talking about 1971's Harold and Maude. This is a comedy. It's a very dark comedy, but it involves Ruth Gordon's Maude, who is in her 80s. And then it has Bud Cort. Right. He's Harold, and he is literally like in his early 20s kind of thing. But it's about, you know, an unlikely companionship that forms between these two. It is Hal Ashby's just recognition that love comes in all shapes and sizes. It's a great movie. So Harold and Maude.
Very nice. George, what's your number three?
I'm going to 2001 for this one. It is Bridget Jones's Diary. It's Renee Zellweger plays the title character. And it's one of those love triangle things, which is fairly common in these kind of things, between Colin Firth and Hugh Grant. And what I appreciated. Now, they made sequels. They made two or three sequels, and they're, I think it kind of got a little stale. But the first one, what I really liked was the main character. She's an average woman who faces struggles about her age and weight. You know, she actually gained weight for this role. She's self-conscious about her status at her job and her lack of men. And then the whole personal diary memoir voiceover narration thing is a nice touch, but it's got some good moments and a very satisfying, even though predictable, ending with Mr. Darcy and all that stuff. You know, just out on the street in the snow, you know, just in her underwear, and you know, it's just fun. Not that part, but I mean, just, I know that sounds really creepy that's the part. really fun in those leopard panties. Have you guys seen this?
Which one again?
I'm sure I have. It's the original one, right?
The original one, yeah. Because I know there's a couple of them. I think I've seen the original one. I just, you know, the whole Zellweger playing British, you know, she did a great job, but I don't know. She was from Spring, Texas. I
love that it's very, the character's very self-depreciating, and she just goes all in as an actress with it, you know. But it's great. And Hugh Grant, you know, I love when Hugh Grant is a slimy, unlikable character.
Slimy Hugh Grant.
Spoiler, he is in this as well.
Smug Hugh Grant, slimy Hugh Grant, and then bashful Hugh Grant.
Yeah. So Bridget Jones's Diary.
All right. Hopefully this is on one of your lists. It might be higher, but this is the movie from 1989 that asked the question, can a man and woman be friends without sex getting in the way? It is When Harry Met Sally with Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan. I think it's all evolved out of Rob Reiner talking to Nora Ephron about all these stories he had dating between, you know, his last marriage and trying to have women friends and all this kind of situations involved into a great movie. I love how they frame it with other couples kind of talking throughout the movie, that all the trials and tribulations they've been through as we're seeing Harry and Sally go through their life. So
and it's that, well done. It's that little Ephron thing at the end where you get to see them. This is my number two, Jim. It's
okay, very good.
Heartwarming.
This is my number one.
Oh, yeah, wow. I thought it would be on one of you guys' lists. Yeah. So I overshot. Both of you guys have it. So yeah, please go ahead.
So, you know, I think it was the perfect storm of talent at the right time. Like you already mentioned, Nora Ephron's dialogue is amazing. Rob Reiner, he's got a sensibility to his direction that there's, you know, and at the time, you just had America's Sweetheart, Meg Ryan, that kind of sweet quirkiness, which offset Billy Crystal's Harry, who's all cranky and pessimistic and everything. And you mentioned that faux documentary, those vignettes. That I think that's my favorite part, that just wraps it up in this nice little bow at the end. And you've got Bruno Kirby and Carrie Fisher.
That's right.
The best line of the film is delivered by Reiner's own mother in the diner. I'll have what she's having. And if you don't know what we're talking about, go watch the diner scene. But
yes,
what else, Joseph?
Often duplicated, it almost has become sort of the quintessential like romantic comedy. I think the reason why is because it does something very different than most rom-coms. In fact, everything on our list I'm looking at here, it is all guilty of the same thing, which is normally romantic comedies are told from the perspective of one of the couples, either the man's perspective or the woman's perspective. This one, it is equally shared. We get to see what their lives and what their perspectives are, and it's balanced. And I think that's what makes it work so well, because I remember this was my favorite movie in 1989, in 1990. You could ask me, what's your favorite movie? And I would say Harry Met Sally, because I thought it was just so well done. It gave the perspectives that I thought, you know, at that time I was young, I was single and all that. And I'm like, I see all of this happening. It just, you know, had a lot of truth to it and stuff like that. It's sort of fun watching it now because it is a little bit dated, you know, with some of the things there, because it's obviously before social media and all that. But overall, my number one, because I think it's the best romantic comedy ever made.
We saw so many movies in the summer of 1989, Joseph, have two movies. I mean, you think Batman, you think Indiana Jones, Last Crusade, UHF.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And this one just sort of hit home for me. Weapon spoke 2, to me.
Yep. Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Or Honey, I Blew Up the Kid. One of them things.
The good one.
Honey, right. I blanked the kids.
Yeah. You know, so time now for intromission. Caitlin presents different juggling styles. Wow. Okay.
Well,
come on, Caitlin.
I'm waiting for them to drop one.
Are we? Is it happening?
No. Is it a silent juggler?
Are they tap dancing?
That sounds like tap dancing.
Nice little beat, though. Robots. Doing the ham bone.
I'm trying to figure out how they're juggling because the rhythm is real weird. Cha-cha-cha. I will say they are the noisiest juggler I've ever heard.
Yeah, I didn't think it would be able to hear anything.
Tap dancing. T for two, for T for two. You know this is juggling?
I need for them to drop one.
Wow.
Okay. Wow. Caitlin, thank you so much for that one. That
could have been so many things. Tap dancing.
Yeah, I want to go back and listen to the tap dancing.
Juggling, playing drums on your knee.
So many things. Like, oh no. Yeah, it's, what was it? Well sounds. Could have
been like a card in the spokes of your bike. It sounded so many. Like, all right. So we are on now to number 3, Toy That Time Forgot, Joseph.
Merlin, also known as Merlin the Electronic Wizard from Parker Brothers. It looked like a giant red cell phone before cell phones ever existed. It had a series of red, like touch tone dots. You could play tic-tac-toe, Music Machine, Echo, which was basically a Simon ripoff, you know, Blackjack 13, all these things. And it was the age. This was 1978. It was the age of electronics when you thought, this is the future. This is as good as it's going to get. My younger brother Tom actually owned this. It was too cool of a toy for my parents to give me, as we've discussed before, being the third child, the middle son. I didn't get the cool gifts. So my younger brother Tom got this one. And of course, I played with it all the time to his chagrin. So there you go. Merlin.
Merlin. George, you're number 3.
Nice. This is the Evil Knievel stunt cycle from 1973.
Nice.
That was the must-have toy of that holiday season. And it's basically this wind-up and go action toy launcher thing. Little 6-foot figure on a tiny 8-inch motorcycle. And, you know, he could jump things and crash and flips. And you could jump. Seriously, you could jump anywhere from... a meter to, well, let me 3 to 10 feet. But to understand the appeal, you have to know it was based on a real life stunt guy, Evil Knievel, and he had successful jumps about 275, 280 jumps or so, crash landed 15 times. One of his most famous things was he crashed in 1968. He tried to jump over the fountains at Caesar's Palace, and he fractured his skull. He was in a coma speaking of comas, he was in a coma for a month or so. And then, well, of course,
that's how he met his wife. It was really a good story.
Oh, yeah. Well, because he punctured his testicle. You know. But Ideal,
while you were injured,
the toy company, while you were jumping, is the name. Ideal, the toy company, said that they made over $125 million off it, because he had the, and I had this toy. What was great is after a while of trying to get him to jump stuff, you just got him to crash into stuff, because it's Evel Knievel, right? He's known for, you know, not making
the doll jump. Was rubber, so the doll didn't break. You just
run at full speed into brick and watch him go flying off.
I had this. I also had the Snake River Canyon. They had the Snake River Canyon rocket. I had that also. Where the rocket.
Well, I'm going to disagree and say I think my Daring Debbie doll in her pink jumpsuit was just as good. At least that's what my parents told me, because they got the Evel Knievel from my older brother and gave me the Daring Debbie doll.
Well, I had to wait till Christmas. I had Mego's Action Jackson up until I could actually get the Evel Knievel doll, because that was a lot cheaper. Mego, look up Mego's Action Jackson. It's not based upon the Carl Weathers film.
No,
the flimsiest toy. And the weirdest thing about Action Jackson,
it's like worse than Big Jim.
If you changed his clothes, if you changed Action Jackson's clothes, he had like bumps that resembled hair in his private area, but he had no privates. So I was trying to figure out what kind of weird world or what was Mego thinking, like, okay, we want something here. We can't really put what we want there. Let's just put like stubble hair.
We can't put the male organ, but we're going to put
pubis. We're good with the pubis.
My number three would probably, we'd still be playing this game today if it went for those pesky video games that went and destroyed everything. I'm talking about ABC's Talking Monday Night Football board game from 1971. My brother and my dad played it all the time, and then I started playing. Basically, it is a board game, but you got these little records and a little record player. So what you do is it's almost like a really analog version of Madden. You have there on the records, there's plays like passing, running, gadget plays, and you put it in. On the other side of the records, the defense, they want to play, and they push it down and it plays the playback for you. So I remember the gadget play one. It was always like, if you put the wrong defense, oh, he's running. What? It's a pass back. Oh, it's a flea flicker. Touchdown. So there was a couple, like just like on the video games, there was a couple plays that crap. If you hit the wrong thing, it was an instant touchdown. But the little records were so cool. And it was almost like the record player was like this, you know, it was like pretty small too. So great fun game. I think they had the actual Monday Night Football announcers. But you got to move the ball as you went to the board as the plays commenced. But ABC's Monday Night Talking Football with the little records, missed that one. They still have it available on eBay because it's really rare. We had the 1971 version. 72 had Roger Staubach on the cover. So there you go.
Nice.
Good stuff. Yeah, my list is really long gone and you know, eBay.
Yeah, I remember this one though, Jim. This is one that I do remember playing.
It's good stuff.
It was fun.
Yeah, and that just to be in the music too and see records that small was kind of cool. All right, so number two, romantic comedy, Joseph.
Okay, my final entry, because we already did my number one. My final entry is the story of Pygmalion. Which is 1977's Annie Hall.
My Fair Lady.
This is the modern day version of it.
I was getting my Wilford Hyde White impersonation ready to go. By George, I think she's got it.
So Annie Hall, you know, it's a sort of the same thing as, you know, George's entry about broadcast news, which is it doesn't have a happy ending on this one, because this is a guy who sort of discovers and starts to mold this young woman, Diane Keaton, into, you know, what he thinks is like going to be a perfect woman. She basically outgrows him.
She becomes a perfect woman and leaves.
Yeah, you know, and leaves. And so it's sort of this tragic kind of thing of, you know, the final scene is sort of heart-wrenching, because he realizes that, you know, he created this, but he can no longer have her, you know, kind of thing. And he
but
was,
you know, this is my number one.
Oh, okay.
He says at twice in the movie, he refers to the Groucho Marx line that
I never would like someone. Yeah.
I would never want to be in a club that would have me.
That's true.
And the woman that he wants, he won't have him. So you kind of get a hint that that's what's going to happen, you know?
Oh, wow. But, so there you go.
Yeah. So it makes it, you know, and I know that there's problems with Woody Allen, but just to look at this, this was kind of the first movie I remember seeing that was a romantic comedy for me. Mm-hmm. That's why it's number one on my list. But my number two is When Harry Met Sally. So
you're done.
I am done.
George and I exchanged.
Wow. Okay.
Ones and twos.
I still got two more to go. Wow, it's exciting. My number two comes from 2007. It kind of takes the whole fairy tale world and turns it upside down. I'm talking about Disney's Enchanted with Amy Adams as Princess Giselle. It's actually forced into the real world along with her other characters. Great cast here. Patrick Dempsey, Idina Menzel. You also have Julie Andrews as the narrator. Animated beginning to it. You have the whole fairy tale set up, and then, of course, subverted to go into real life and Giselle's and you know, encountering mean people. What was that?
Sigourney Weaver's the
no, evil it's witch. Susan Sarandon.
Oh, I'm sorry, you're right. I've got those confused.
Yeah, so but really, I did really like Timothy Spall, who was also in Sweeney Todd, is kind of the evil, he's always good in everything he does. Talking squirrel, everything you want in a romantic comedy that kind of takes the fairy tale tale and turns it upside down. But the most thing is the winning performance of Amy Adams, and of course the songs are so good in this too. I really, really appreciated the songs. I would skip the sequel and just do this one and kind of like leave it there. Sequel gets a little preachy, but this one is
enjoyable on so many levels, Jim, because this is probably one of the greatest fish out of water things ever. Just because, you know, she doesn't understand how the real world works, you know. I mean, I would put this up against Jeff Bridges and Starman or something.
Yeah, definitely. I could see that.
But yeah, lots of fun and romantic. So good.
All right. We'll come back for my number one. I'm excited about that. I'm the only person left. All right. What is our number two toy the time forgot, Joseph?
Easily the most dangerous toy I've ever owned in my life. I owned a lot of dangerous toys, but this one takes the cake. I'm talking about from 1977. I begged my parents for it. Loved this toy, Coleco's Mr. Quarterback. This was so dangerous. I mean, you think about it and you're like, how in the heck did it ever pass any type of safety standards? It was basically a toy catapult. And that was the issue with it, is that you would crank this thing back, set it on a timer, and it would pass you, you could either go for a short pass, which was about 5 yards, or a long pass, which were basically 10 yards. It was a plastic football that came with it. It was great. It operated exactly like it promised. The issue, though, is to crank this thing back, the arm would just, it was spring loaded, and it has so much tension on that you could really break an arm. You could easily break an arm if you got smacked with it. And I got smacked a couple of times and I hurt myself bad. But this is the thing, is that you quickly got bored with catching passes with that. And while it could pass a ball for like 10 yards, you could put a glass bottle on it and it would go for 20 or 30 yards. So now it became another game called catapult of how much crap could you throw on it and then be as dangerous as possible. Again, the neighborhood I grew up in, this was a battle game that we just started to create of like, hey, nice. Stand over there. I'm going to like shuck a piece of glass at you. So Mr. Quarterback is my number two.
Very nice. Yes. All right, George, what's your number two?
I think we need a disclaimer. No children were harmed in the recording of this. Mr. Quarterback. my number two is just an awful toy. It's Tudor Electric Football Stadium's Packers Cowboys tested. It is this, it's made to look like a little football field, and you have little football men, and you turn this machine on, and it just vibrates and shakes the field. And you have like a little foam football, tiny, tiny, like the head of a Q-tip. And you put it in one of your runners, and you know, you spend all this time lining these guys up, and then you hope that your guy vibrates or on the field vibrating makes it to the end zone before one of the opposing team touches him, and that would indicate a tackle. Do y'all know this game?
Okay, so this, I own the game, but George, I don't know if you knew this, because I didn't. I had no idea. On the figurines at the bottom, there was a little turn knob that would put the player in the direction you want it to go to. So you put straight for him to go straight, right, left, and all that.
Right.
I didn't know that playing the damn game. I would line them up like you said, and they'd just go in circles. I'm like, this game sucks. You know, I didn't
get it. That's what I'm saying. You would spend an inordinate amount of time setting up this thing, and then it would just be over. But yeah, and then when you got bored with the game, you could set all the guys to spin, and they would just spin like some kind of weird, you know, dance routine or something, you know, some weird musical.
Yes, but, the majority was set up. The majority of the game was setting it up, which was
very nice.
And it was so loud. You could not play this quietly, because it's
All right. My number,
Jim is done with us.
I'm done with this one. Yeah.
Okay. Joseph, you got to vote for this. Okay.
Was first came out in 1965 until 1976. I didn't know it ended that quickly. It was Mark's Toys Heroes of the West action figures, but I'm going to pick Johnny West, because he was the main action figure. And these were Western dolls made out of some sort of vinyl or something. There was no actual clothes. It was either plastic or vinyl. How do I know this? Because when I was at my friend Mike Manerick's house in St. Louis, I think their dog or cat peed on one of them, and you can just wash them off, and you don't have any kind of major thing because there was no cloth. But he had the whole rubber. He had the rubber kind of vest. Everything was rubber. They had Jane West. They had Geronimo.
That's the one you want, Joseph. That's the one your family will get you.
Yes. And they have Geronimo, and they actually ended up coming out with a Custer one too, which I'm sure ended up getting, destroyed in this Heroes of the West. Geronimo, but they had the whole Western motif. But Johnny West was the one. He looked like John Wayne pretty much. They probably wanted to put a John Wayne action figure out, and they said, well, you can't do that without his permission, so we'll just make him Johnny
West. But they already made them holds.
Yeah. But it looks a lot like John Wayne, but I do remember this being and some of them came apart where you can actually put them back together. But I like the classic one. I had these, and they're relatively cheap too. And I'm pretty sure Mark's Toys isn't around anymore, but look up Johnny West. Johnny West, and you'll see the amazing kind of fun doll that were involved.
Marks, they're the ones that made the Rock'em Sock'em Robots.
Yeah, very unique. Don't look like any other doll. I mean, well, like with the plastic, it's like they're all like Jane West's outfits, all one color. There's no color. I mean, Johnny West is all brown, basically. So there you go. The Heroes of the West.
You own some really lame toys there, Jeff, because I don't remember this one. This is a
cool toy. Look it up.
I don't remember this one. So it's a Western toy figure.
I'm not going to say.
Heroes of the West. They're
cheap. You're one to say, you know.
I own the Daring Debbie doll. I know.
Yes, I know.
It's true. All right, let's go to
you're the only one, Jim. Go back to you.
One, yes, from 1988, the ultimate, another fish out of water story, where a prince leaves to go to find his queen in Queens. I'm talking about Coming to America. Not only do you get the romantic comedy, you get a lot of comedy here, including Eddie Murphy playing multiple roles as the barbershop. Him and Arsenio Hall just having a great time doing the whole barbershop scenes. And also when Arsenio Hall plays the preacher. Help Gilligan that's get off
best.
The island.
That's the best.
Best. And then you have the whole dating scene where they're trying to go to New York and they have all these crazy people. And then they end up working at McDowell's and he finds his McDowell. Queen. And yes. McDowell's daughter, who ends up going, you know, is dating currently dating the Prince of Soul Glow. So you have so many great, great elements to this movie. And Eddie Murphy, of course, one of the kings of comedy, at on the top of his game. John Landis, some of their movies are the best. I mean, they did Trading Places together. So this is definitely a kind of continuation of that kind of humor. And then, in fact, the great thing in this is one of the best cameos. I think it was on our cameo show. They bring back the Dukes as homeless people when he gives away his money. And they said, Randolph, we're back. So Coming to America is my number one romantic comedy and heavy on the comedy. Number one toy that time forgot, Joseph.
So this is 1977 again, you know, the year that all the really cool stuff's. I got my Mr. Quarterback, but I didn't get this. I wanted to get this. I had to wait to get Coleco's version of it, but the one that I really, really wanted was Mattel's Electronic Football. This was the quintessential handheld video game. This Everyone is my had number it. One.
I still have it.
Huh?
I have one here with me right now.
Do you really?
You guys talk. I'll get the sound effects. Hopefully the battery works.
Oh my gosh. This was it. I mean, this was, you know, in every elementary, every middle school possible because on Christmas Day.
Yeah. While he's gone, let's just vote for our stuff.
He'll never know. He'll never know.
he's yelling something.
But the George, it's your number one to just sort of describe a little bit of the game and why it's so wonderful.
Well, a couple of crazy things about this. Do you remember you couldn't just go to a store and buy this?
Right.
It was sold through the Sears catalog, and it was about the size of a large calculator.
Right.
Used the little LED technology. And there were three buttons for control, up, down.
See, that's the Coleco one. That's the Coleco one. That's the one I own, Jim.
No, this is the second version. This is the green one.
Oh, that's Mattel, too. Okay.
Yeah, that's the green one.
You get past on the second one. That was the big deal.
Yeah, it was. I never had that one. I had the beige one. But it was a forerunner to the Game Boy that everybody knows today. But this whole thing, this and some other things that made my honorable mention, like the Battlestar Galactica game that they had, Space Alert, which I also had, it actually made the Mattel company, it turned into a $400 million category, you know.
Well, the thing about it is, you're right. I mean, they sold this thing through Sears only. It was exclusively sold through Sears. Sears did not think it was going to be a hit. And so they only made like 100,000 units.
Oh, then
within 6 months, they had sold over 500,000. And so there's a lot of shortcomings in the game. Number one, if you ever notice, just a little trivia there, there's only 9 yards in the game. There's not 10. So it doesn't have the, but it's just because they were like, oh my gosh, they really thought this isn't going to be a seller. And it was like crazy, right?
But by today's standards, very rudimentary. You just have this little red light that represents you. You're a little bit brighter than the other ones, and this poorly defined field, like you said, 9 yards instead of 10, and you just kind of you got to zigzag through these other little moving blips to get a touchdown. And of course, you get a high pitched touchdown fanfare. Can you do it, Jim?
I'm stinking up right now. Maybe if I blow this, I could hold on. I've got a big rush going here.
Get a touchdown and put it up. Yeah. To the mic.
So the whole thing about it is one screen with 9 yards, and so you have to run it through the screen. It would sort of do this overlapping thing. You'd just run through the screen like 9 times to get that touchdown.
Right.
Yeah, it's gonna take too long. Sorry.
So guys. I logged many hours. But now, did you have the basketball one too?
I did. Now
the basketball was good. I never had the baseball one.
The second one was good too. The green one that I have here is you could actually pass. Once you learn how to pass, it turns to be pretty good.
Yeah, I had the passing feature. Oh, I heard that.
Yeah, I was still trying
to score. A little tackle on that. You know, the kids out there have no idea what we're talking about. But this thing, I remember my friend getting it at his birthday party. We were at a skating rink, a guy's birthday party.
Put the party and, down.
I'm close up on the 6 yard line.
Oh, here we go.
Here we go. Get ready.
Come on.
Did you hear that?
No. No.
I mean, I didn't hear it. My headphones.
Dang it.
You know, we're going to have to put in the sound effects for it to make it really cool. But I remember my friend got it. We were at a skating rink and everyone went skating. He left his presents on the table and I sat back and I started playing this and I thought, this is the future. Like, I don't need anything else in my life. I thought that this was like the best part because all I could think about is at the time we were driving to my grandparents' house and it was like a 5-hour, 6-hour journey because you got to remember at the time highway speeds were 55.
Yeah.
And so it just took forever to get anywhere.
They had not invented the number 75 yet.
Well, you know, and so it just took forever. And so you had to read Mad magazines and you had to read comic books.
Or cracked.
That's right. If you were desperate, sick, I guess. That's what you do. And I thought this is a game changer, truly a game changer, you know, with it. So yeah, I great memories. My number one, George's number one. It makes it in.
Oh, yeah. Guys, your number one is great, but you don't have the number one forgotten toy of all time. This is the greatest forgotten toy of all time. In fact, it's Mr. very hard
suppository
to find.
Toy.
Nope. Right? First released in 1975. Hugo, Man of a Thousand Faces.
Oh yeah.
This
I wanted one of these so bad I never got one.
This is a bald, rather creepy looking hollow torso and head, vinyl top with stuffed cloth arms, and you had everything you can to make him the man of a thousand faces, including sideburns, goatee, eyebrows, noses, chin, scars, warts, eyes, an eye patch, sunglasses, eyeglasses, a mask, a head bandage, mustaches, fangs, and a wig. So made kind of famous by Pee Wee Herman in his first Pee Wee Herman show as the ventriloquist doll that he brought up and said, Mr. Mongo hypnotizing the audience. That's where you could probably see him now, but very hard to find the original kit of Hugo. I wanted this so bad. I never got one.
I never got it either, Jim. Solidarity. Did you have a Mrs. Hugo?
No, I never got the Hugo because he creeped me out. I remember seeing this character and going, why would anyone want this? I guess Jim wanted it and George was yearning for it, but I thought, oh my god, no, he creeped me out.
one of the greatest toys of all time. I've seen some like t-shirts with the box on it. The box is creepy too. You have a kid applying a beard to Hugo acting kind of creepy himself. So, and then you have more kind of racist pictures at the bottom. You have a Fu Manchu Hugo and a couple other things going on. So, but he is the man of a thousand faces. So there you go.
Hugo. The reason I have this goatee is
because of Hugo.
I never got a Hugo.
Is that why you wear the blue shirt with the tie on there? I always thought does he look like a painter? It was like a shirt. It had like a tie and it was just,
it wasn't a shirt. It was at best a poncho. Yeah. So it's like, we're spending all the money on the sideburns. We don't have time to sew this guy a shirt.
Cut a piece of cloth and we'll put them on him, tie it on him.
Yeah. Cause you know, what's weirder than Hugo? Naked Hugo. So they were like, yeah, we can't do this. You know?
All right. Man of a thousand chests. Cool. All right. There we go. Let's move. We're done, actually. That is
I've got some honorable mentions for the rom-com, if we're doing that.
Go ahead. I got a couple, too.
Okay. Sleepless in Seattle, Forgetting Sarah Marshall, and Joseph wanted me to put on You've Got Mail, but instead I put the original Shop Around the Corner from 1940.
Very nice.
I can appreciate that a lot more than the crap that is.
Yeah.
You got Mail.
Joseph, why do you hate that so much?
It makes no sense.
Oh, wait.
I'm apologizing because George mentioned a terrible, terrible movie. So I'm apologizing to our listening audience right now. I'm sorry. I thought we were going to have a You Got Mail freeless kind of episode, and we didn't get it. So I'm sorry. George sucks. Okay.
You know, the only reason I mentioned it is because you were very passionate about.
Oh my gosh!
I mean, almost to the point of threatening.
This brought it out of me. This brought it out of me.
I just had it's a guilty pleasure. Monster in Law. For some reason, the movie was funny to me.
Ooh, wow!
And Jane then Fonda, right?
Yeah, and modern
guilty.
Modern romance, but it was more kind of more of a breakup movie, so I couldn't put it on my top five. But
yeah, that was funny, great, funny fantastic. I would like to say that this has been a Nicholas Sparks free episode, which I'm very proud of us.
Wow. Yeah. Whose fault is that?
Mm-hmm. Toys in Time for God. I just had Migos nobody's... Action Jackson just because, you know, I had to mention one more time. That was the
choice. No, I don't have any. I don't have any. So
I have the like I kind of made mention to it. 1977. Everybody's going crazy with Star Wars. Battlestar Galactica was a television show, and I had the Battlestar Galactica Space Alert, which is basically the football game turned sideways. but you shoot to defend the Battlestar Galactica spaceship. You have these little photon laser torpedoes shooting at the Cylon Raiders and everything. And that actually had more gameplay than the football thing, because the football one, you could kind of figure out the pattern, how to fake out the defenders there, but this one, you know, you just maybe you could figure it out, maybe there was a pattern, I just wasn't smart enough. But
quick update on that game, the Cylon Raiders, they actually moved to Las Vegas, so they're playing in Las Vegas now, so
perfect.
All right, so that pretty much does it for the show.
All right,
you know,
are we gonna vote or are we?
Oh, sorry, yeah, let's vote. Sorry about that.
Jim has a pizza. To
My
get
bad.
To. Which one do we want to do first? The rom-com.
We got two on rom-com, so let's go with that. I feel like that'd be the easier of the choice. With it, and
all right, so we have When Harry Met Sally. That's a three-way tie. And then Annie Hall, Joseph and I have that on our list. What we have to choose from, Coming to America.
They're coming to America.
Enchanted, While You Were Sleeping, Defending Your Life, The Wedding Singer, The Big Sick, Bridget Jones's Diary, Broadcast News, Moonstruck. So what's it going to be? When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie.
Moonstruck is like the first movie my wife and I saw together, but Singer has Rodney Gober in it, so that's tough decision.
can we do both?
We can do both. I'm fine with that.
Yeah. So we need one more.
Let's see here.
Let's do Coming to America because it has lots of comedy in it. As Jim said three times,
loads of comedy.
You get your comedy dollars worth there.
That's right.
So we end up with Coming to America, The Wedding Singer, Annie Hall, When Harry Met Sally, and Moonstruck.
Yes. Like I guarantee you right now, any female listeners that we had. No longer have, because they're like, this is not a list made by women.
Both of them. Yeah.
Yeah. Both of them are like out now. They're just like, nope.
But look at this
notebook.
We've got 1977. Every year, a different year here. 1977, 1987, 88, and 89.
98. So, yeah. That's good.
All right. Pretty interesting. And 98. Sorry. Yeah. All right. This is a little bit harder. The only match we have, and Joseph didn't even have this toy, is Mattel's electronic football. I'm just to creep him out. I'm throwing my vote to Hugo.
Yeah,
Hugo. I am still sad. I do not have Hugo. Man,
so they have a couple.
I just can't. I didn't like the accessory where they had like a little can of shoe polish. I did not like that at all. I thought that was a terrible.
They did
look.
Not have a can of shoe polish.
It was a thousand faces, Jim. Don't tell me he did not do that.
Have a chiposan. They would have been in big trouble.
Magic 8 Ball, Rock'em Sock'em Robots, Evil Knievel Stunt Cycle, the electronic tutor, electronic football game thing. Not the electronic. I'm sorry. The the electric.
This is yeah.
May I just say, Harold and Maude was not a toy.
Oh, did that? Oh, sorry.
That's just wrong.
This is not an easy job. Here, let me put it back over here. Would that
Where's my Ruth Gordon action figure?
Would that change anything? Would anybody have voted for it? I'm sorry.
Probably not.
Wow. Get it on the right list.
All right. But hey, we got the Weebles. We got
football.
We got the Weebles.
We got the slip and slide with pine cone, special pine cone action. Weebles, Karate Man, Merlin, the electronic wizard, ABC's Talking Monday Night Board Game. I've never heard of this. You played a record.
Yeah.
They're little mini records. And basically, awesome. You would have. It was sort of like you had. Playing a.
I know what you're talking about. Not
Scrabble.
But not like.
Not real records. They're very small.
No, they're like little plastic one-inch disc. Yeah, okay, they look like little records. And you would have like a little Scrabble kind of
I know what
drawer to set them up on, right, Jim?
Yeah, I pictured Jim walking over to the phonograph and cranking.
He takes the ball, flips it back to the quarterback. He's wide open. Touchdown.
So Mark's toys, Johnny West,
Heroes of the West,
which is washable John Wayne.
Yes, dogs can pee on it.
Dogs urinating.
That's saying something.
That's right. Coleco's Mr. Quarterback, slash catapult. I want to vote for that just because it's dangerous.
Quarterback, is that? That's when he threw like this, right?
Yeah, yeah. Now they have
Hooper
one
toe
that
was the same. Was the same family, right? He hit his head. And he kicked the ball.
He kicked it. Yeah.
What are you saying?
They had totally super. Different. They had super toe, and they had a soccer one. I think it had.
Yeah,
super
that's toe. Not. That's not what this is.
Okay.
This is a look it up. Look up Mr. Quarterback.
Tell us what to
see.
Do.
It's like this green base, and it has a metal arm that you like literally crank back, and then you
use for home defense. You just put it by the back door.
Seriously, it was the most dangerous thing. It was cool. It was the coolest thing ever.
Okay,
but,
I see it now. I remember this one. Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was like the super toe, but it was just throwing the arm. Okay.
Oh, no.
Super toe would be on my my honorable mention.
Yeah. So, right.
So are y'all voting for Evil Knievel or not?
I mean,
I can vote for Evil Knievel.
I can vote for I had it. I had it, definitely.
Daring Debbie was really good, though. All I'm saying is Daring Debbie was really good.
Good. That's how Joseph learned to kiss. All right, so that's three. Hugo, Evil Knievel, Electronic Football.
I would really like Mr. Quarterback on there because it was a catapult. It was basically
two toys for football. We need to get some sort of action figure. Well, we got Evil Knievel in there. Yeah, what about, I think either Rock'em Sock'em or Karate Men need to go in. So
yeah, those are both kind of the same. The fight, Jim, you decide.
And I remember Rock'em Sock'em. I don't remember karate at all. I looked it up, Jim.
Isn't this Toys the Time Forgot?
Oh, see?
I didn't know. That's the problem. I didn't forget them. I never knew them.
You just set me up for the win there with Toys Time Forgot. You don't even remember it. That's how forgotten this is.
I will give it to you because, you know.
Karate, man.
I probably forgot it as soon as it came out because I do not remember this toy at all. But I will give it to you, Jim.
Who would win in a fight, Jim? You get to decide. Hulsar, the ultimate man of adventure, or Karate Man? You
I think Karate Man, since they're two, they're a lot smaller, but if they gang up on Pulsar,
okay,
they might pierce him. They could see his heart. They might take
kinda
his heart
like,
out.
Kind of like you and Joseph on me on The Green Knight. So, okay. Karate so here's,
Man makes it nice.
Here's what we end up with. Toys That Time Forgot, Hugo, Man of a Thousand Creepy Faces, 20 of them very racist. Coleco's Mr. Quarterback and Death Trebuchet, Karate Men, Mattel's Football, and Evel Knievel's Stunt Cycle, Break All His Bones in His Body. So that's good, guys. Yeah. Episode 200.
Episode 200.
Tom, thanks for, you know, all the hard work this week doing, you know, the stuff. You always make stuff, and then when it really counts, you make nothing. So.
What actually did he do? I mean, there was no clips.
Caitlin, I don't know.
There was no clips. There was no kind of regular stuff that he does. What actually did he do? What are you thanking him for? That's the question.
I was being sarcastic because he did not do anything.
Yes.
Seriously, Caitlin, who's not even here for this episode, but she managed to get us a tap dancer and at least lied and said it was
exactly
said it was a juggler. You know, at least there's some effort.
A very confused there, tap so. Dancer is what she gave us. Very confused. He thought it was juggling. No one told him otherwise.
Right. So are we ready to put episode 200 in the canister?
Let's go ahead and shoot it up and get the shovels out.
What is that noise?
I don't know. Somebody's here. Tom's? I see Tom.
Tom, are you going to get that?
I see Caitlin. Somebody's here.
That's not Caitlin. That's the cutout of Caitlin when she's not here.
Excuse me. Who are you and why are you here? What's
going on? Is this my Uber?
I don't know.
Give me 5 minutes.
Who are you?
I think it's new. I'm not Uber. I'm Jason. I'm Jason Meeker. I'm the one who's been sending you the letters.
What letters?
Wait a minute. I've been apologizing to you guys. I've been admitting that we suck.
No, I never agreed to that.
Whoa, Jason. Put down that weapon, whatever that is, and why are you pointing it at George? What are you?
That's not even real, guys. This guy, Tom.
George. Lady Elaine Fairchild says hello.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I fell on my keys.
What's going on? What? You cut George in half. There's pus everywhere.
Are we still putting the stuff in the canister?
George's. There's two Georges.
And you two? I have something for you guys, too.
What?
Joseph, you sound effeminate.